Those of you who were here last Shabbat know that I was struck with a sudden revelation, not from God, but just the sort of revelation that you have when you realize that an important task has been left undone and you have to do it. For me, it was the realization that although this is a conservative synagogue and we call ourselves conservative Jews, that a lot of us really don't know what that means. That we tend to define conservative Judaism by what it isn't as opposed to what it is. And that it was important that I lay out what it is that I've understood, having grown up as the child of a conservative rabbi and gone to conservative rabbinical school and conservative summer camps, what I understood and learned as a result of that heritage. Last week I talked about the conservative movement and the people Israel. And this morning I want to talk about the way the conservative movement sees the Torah. But before I do that, I want to back into it by telling you that these past couple of weeks there has been, on this subject, a tremendous controversy in the Orthodox movement because of an article written by an Orthodox rabbi, a well-known Orthodox rabbi named Farber. And I'm telling you about this controversy not only because it will help me explain the conservative movement, but because sometimes, not at all intentionally, I've been involved in some controversies. And it is always nice when someone else is in a controversy. You want to point at them and say, look at this guy. This one isn't about me. What happened was that Rabbi Farber did an extensive study of modern scholarship on the Torah, what is sometimes called biblical criticism, though that's not a great title. Modern scholarship on the Torah, and he wrote an article saying, look, my fellow Orthodox Jews, we can no longer sustain the idea that God wrote every word of this. We know too much to be able to say that in the face of all this modern scholarship. Well, this was not a real popular idea. And there was a lot of back and forth, but the interesting thing was there was a lot of debate about it. It wasn't just summarily rejected. And the reason that that is so is we actually do know a lot more about the way the Torah was put together than we did 50, 100, 200, 500, 1,000 years ago. There are some things that we know about the Torah that all of our ancestors knew. That it allows things that we think are just wrong. The stoning of a rebellious son, for example. Which, although you may feel like it sometimes, is actually not something we think is legitimate. Or even though the Jews are freed from slavery in Egypt, Jews are still permitted to have slaves. And there are laws about how you have to treat your slave, and I think today we think that we've moved on from there. Other laws as well, and I could go through them at great length, but there's no reason to, that make it difficult for us to feel as though the way the Torah was written is the way it must always be practiced today. The position of women in modern society is a perfect example, but there are many others. Our ancestors also knew that there were stories in the Torah that repeat themselves with slight variations. They knew that there were contradictions all over the Torah, that in one place it says there are 12 tribes, in one place 13, in one place 10. That sometimes David is said to have 11 children, sometimes he has 17. That there are various other contradictions in the Torah that they worked to reconcile in different ways. And the rabbis would try to filter out those parts of the Torah that they could not accept. So they said, for example, the stoning of a rebellious son never happened and never will happen. because they couldn't accept morally the idea that God would call for that. And they tried to reconcile in sometimes very ingenious and beautiful ways the different contradictions in the Torah. But they realized, the rabbis, even in their own discussions, and there are hints of this all over the Talmud, that there were lots of problems with the idea that all of us stood at Sinai and God gave Moses all of the Torah. For example, if God gave Moses the Torah at Sinai, then why was Moses surprised years later when Korach rebelled against him? He knew about it. He got it at Sinai. Did he know everything that he was going to say for all the years following Sinai? Because God had already told him, by the way, at this episode, you're going to say this. So in the Talmud, there's also recorded an opinion that God gave Moses the Torah gradually, in scrolls, over time. Because they knew there was a problem with the idea that God gave it once, and then Moses had to act out everything that God had told him. But then it becomes more difficult as you learn more. If I stood up before you right now and I started to speak the English of Shakespeare, first of all, you'd be impressed. Okay. But you would know that there's something wrong here. Because language develops. And if you're sensitive to English or to any other language, you can tell that expression is an old one, that expression is a new one. Now that we know much more about the development of language and the development of Hebrew, scholars who read the Torah realize some parts of the Torah, some expressions, some words, some conjugations, some forms are older, and some are newer. Some didn't come into the language until hundreds of years later. And then it becomes difficult to say all of it was given at once. It's just that sort of God wanted to vary the grammar hundreds of years before, hundreds of years later, to give scholars something to do later on. It's almost like those fundamentalists who say that God planted all the fossils in the earth, not because dinosaurs ever lived, but he just wanted to fool us and catch those who were unbelievers. But once you see the development of language, and then once you discover, which we now know that our ancestors did not, the stories in other civilizations that parallel the stories of the Torah, because now we have uncovered not only stories from Egypt, but now we have caches of material in ancient Aramaic and Syriac and other languages, and we find that stories in the Torah are told in other ancient civilizations, sometimes almost the same, sometimes different. Then all of a sudden it feels like the Torah developed and formed. It wasn't thrown down from Sinai at one time without regard for every other civilization around the Israelites. It feels as though, in fact, we have learned from others as well as taught others, which is unsurprising because we learn from others today as we teach others. And we know that Jews speak in every language of every civilization that they've gone through, and we change our names and we change our dress and we change some of our ideas. And that's why Judaism develops historically. And that was conservative Judaism's great contribution to Jewish history, was to say that Judaism is not something that was given at once and stays the same, but rather that it develops through time, and the Judaism of Moses is not the same as the Judaism of Akiva, is not the same as the Judaism of Maimonides, is not the same as the Judaism of today. But here is the great difference between the controversy as it exists in, say, Orthodoxy and the way conservative Judaism sees it. We understand the idea that the Torah is a collaboration between human beings and God as a cause for celebration, not a cause for sadness. It's a great thing, not a bad thing. Because here are the two models. One model is, we sat passively there and God said, here it is. You do this, you do this, you do this, you do this, and you do this. And then all of Jewish history was an unfolding about whether we could do what God said. The other is, we are shutafim im HaKadosh Baruch Hu. We are partners with God. And what we have is a dialogue with God. And the dialogue changes throughout history. And so sometimes the Jewish people is in one place, and the dialogue is this way, and sometimes in another place, and the dialogue is that way. And this dialogue, by the way, is illustrated. I'll give you a couple of illustrations. Does God want you to marry one person or many people? I'll let you first answer that for yourself. And then I'll tell you, here is a fundamental structure of human life. Are you monogamous or polygamous? Now, you may know that in the Torah, there are a bunch of people who were polygamous, right? A lot of the people in the Torah marry multiple wives. Ah, but you say, Judaism doesn't believe in that. Well, the answer is, Judaism doesn't believe in that because Rabbeinu Gershom, more than 1,000 years ago, gave what is called a takana, that is, a ruling, an edict, that he said for 1,000 years, no one may have multiple wives. By the way, 1,000 years is up. Just saying. No, but it was a way of saying it was a metaphor for forever. Didn't mean it for literally 1,000 years. But here's what is so interesting about Jewish history. Why did Rabbeinu Gershom give that takana? Because he lived in Christian lands, and in Christian lands you could only have one wife. But guess where the takana didn't have any force? In Muslim lands, where you could have multiple wives. So when the state of Israel was founded, there were Jews who came, for example, from Yemen that had multiple wives. But no Jews from Western Europe did. Now that is as fundamental as it could be about the way you live your life. But we were influenced by the society around us because Jews have always been in dialogue with God as well as with the world. So now the picture starts to get more complicated. And once you start looking at history, things change a lot. For example, the kippah. Do you know there is no law in the Bible or in the Talmud that says that you have to cover your head when you pray? Not only that, not only is there no law in the Bible or in the Talmud, but it gets worse. For most of Jewish history, Jews didn't do that. As late as the 1700s, the Vilna Gaon, the greatest Jewish legal authority in the world, said, you don't have to cover your head while you make a bracha, even when you make a blessing. And yet, if you ask most Jews today, they'll say, of course. You have to cover your head all the time. Jews did always. They always covered their head. But that's because they live too much in today and they don't know our past. And just as you can be parochial in a place, if you've only ever lived in one place, you're parochial, you can be parochial in time. If you think today is the only Judaism that ever existed, you're parochial in time. It was different yesterday and the day before and the day before that. And that's part of this idea that we are collaborators in the creation of the Torah. And that's a beautiful idea. That God came to us and said, let us do this together. Because you're going to have to live it in lots of different lands, in lots of different languages, in lots of different civilizations. And I want it to work in all of them. And no single thing works in every situation. Sometimes, by the way, when Jews didn't think historically, it puzzled them a lot. So in the time of Rashi, they looked at all the cures in the Talmud. I don't know if you know this, but the Talmud has lots of medical cures. Believe me, you don't practice any of them, but it does. And the time of Rashi, French Jewry asked the question, recorded in the commentaries on the Talmud, why don't the cures of the Talmudic rabbis work today? Now the correct answer is, because medicine has developed, and they probably didn't work then either very well, but it was the best they could do. But their answer, because they did not think historically, is, well, it probably worked in Babylonia, it just doesn't work in France. So when we learn about Jewish history, we look at the shifts and we applaud them. We understand that for thousands of years, Jews spoke about returning to Israel, but it wasn't until 19th century nationalism arose that you got Zionism, that you had a combination of the society around us and Jewish history, and that's what you have in the Torah. You think the Jews of ancient Israel lived among the Canaanites and learned nothing from them, took nothing from them? If so, they would be the only human beings in history who lived among other people and didn't react to them at all. So how does conservative Judaism see the Torah? And then I'm going to get to what the essence of the Torah is. It sees it as the ketubah, the marriage contract, just as the rabbis say, between Israel and God. But no one wants a ketubah just handed to them that they have no input in. A ketubah is an indication of a partnership, of us together, of a way that the Jewish people can turn to God and say, we wrote this. Remember that the first set of tablets is written by God and the second set of tablets is written by Moshe. It's the Torah's way of saying, we need human input here, because you are the people that are actually going to have to exist with it. Remember that when Moses, according to the rabbis, went up the mountain to get the Torah from God, the angel said, we don't want to give it to you. But Moses said, angels aren't perfect. Angels are perfect. You don't need a Torah. We, flawed human beings, need a Torah. And it has to live among us. It can't be in concrete. So what is it? What is it that the Torah is given to us to do? First of all, it's given to us to grow with. When Maimonides was asked, how is it that you don't believe in astrology? Because Maimonides wrote against astrology. When the rabbis of the Talmud do believe in astrology, do you know what he answered? He said, that's why God put eyes in front of us and not behind us. In other words, any Judaism that doesn't look forward as well as backward is Judaism that can't grow and change and influence the world. Remember, we're supposed to influence the world, and you can't do that if you don't engage the world. 6 times, not once, but 6 times, the Talmud says, Gadol kvod habriyot, the dignity of human beings is so great that it even pushes aside a prohibition in the Torah. It says it over and over again. Because the first and most important principle of the Torah, the central principle of the Torah, is every human being is created in the image of God. That's an expression of the partnership. God says, I'm going to make you like me, so you get to have input into this too. That idea is based on the notion that I talked about last time. And this Jews don't hear enough, and they should hear it more. But I'm going to start by quoting the Shnei Luchot HaBrit, one of the classic commentators and mystics, who said, if you examine the mitzvot, you will see that almost all of them depend on one command. V'ahavta l'reicha kamocha. You should love your neighbor as yourself. Because, he said, at the heart of the Jewish tradition is love. The love of God for Israel, the love of Israel for God, and the love of human beings for one another. That's why the rabbis say that Moses gave all these commandments and then people came along and reduced them to their essence. So let me read you what the essence is. Isaiah, this is Isaiah's summary of the commandments according to the rabbis. He who walks righteously and speaks uprightly, who despises the gain of oppressions, who shakes his hands lest they hold a bribe, who stops his ears from hearing bloodshed, shuts his eyes from looking on evil, he will dwell on the heights. But it gets better. Because they still thought, Isaiah was a little long-winded. So then they said, Micha came along and he reduced all of the Torah to three ideas. What is the Torah? God has shown you what is good and what God demands of you. Kiim, la'asot mishpat, ahavat chesed, v'hatznea lechetim elohecha. You have to do three things, says Micha, and the rabbis say this is the Torah. You have to do justice, you have to love mercy, and you have to walk humbly with God. In other words, you have to treat human beings right and live a godly life. But even that wasn't good enough. And so they said Habakkuk, not one of the most famous of our prophets, but one of our prophets came along and he reduced all of the Torah to one principle. The principle is the righteous shall live by faith. That's the one principle, according to the Talmud, that sums up the whole Torah. Remember last week when we read V'yetchanan? And we have the parsha that talks about the Shema, and it says, God loves you. Just as the prophet wrote, V'yahavtem etchem, Amar Adonai. God has said, I have loved you. And that reciprocal relationship of love, that's what the Torah is about. That's what the collaboration is. Louis Finkelstein, maybe the most important single figure in conservative Judaism along with Solomon Schechter, said a conservative Jew has a Jewish heart and a modern mind. In other words, you don't close yourself off to the currents and the ideas and the learning and the books around you, but you filter it all through a Jewish heart. And if you ask, what is a Jewish heart? The rabbis told us. It's a heart that does justice, that loves mercy, that walks humbly with God. Right before the Shema, we either read Ahava Rabba Ahavtanu, with a great love, dear God, you have loved us, or Ahavat Olam, with an eternal love, you have loved us. And then we turn around and say, V'yahavta et Adonai Elohecha, you should love the Lord your God. And then you ask Jews what Judaism's about, and they'll say, rules. The rules are the expression of the love. The rules are the outflowing of the love. When you say to a child, I want you back by 11 o'clock, and they say, why are you making all these rules? What do you say? Because I love you. And the rules change when the people grow, when they learn more, when they understand more, when they let the world in, when they're not afraid of it. Fear is in some ways the opposite of love. So what is the Torah? It's our ketubah. It's what joins us together. It's our collaboration and our expression of our partnership with God. It's not God's fiat thrown down on our heads. It's not written to punish us, to make us narrow, to make us fearful. Min ha-metzar karati ya, the psalmist says. From a narrow place, min ha-metzar, like Mitzrayim, from a narrow place I called to you, God. And the next verse reads, Anani, you answered me and widened my world. The Torah makes us wider, broader, deeper, and more loving. And again, if you ask me, how do I know that? My answer is simple. I learned it because I'm a conservative Jew. Shabbat shalom.